This week's episode of The Rebooted Show is brought to you by Beehive, the platform trusted by enterprise publishers like Newsweek and Time. Newsweek is in the midst of an exciting transformation. With AI disrupting search traffic, they're building direct relationships with their audience through newsletters. Bharat Kharish, Newsweek's chief product officer, spoke about why they chose Beehive. And he said that Beehive's consumer-first, tech-driven DNA was exactly what they were looking for. That B2C background ended up growing their tool into being enterprise ready. Newsweek has aggressive newsletter plans designed around adding new audiences and launching new products. With more industry leaders like Newsweek migrating to Beehive and 2026 planning in full effect, now's the time to see how Beehive can take your content to the next level. If you want to see what your next stage of growth could look like, go to beehive.com/TRB. That is spelled BEEHIIV.com/TRB. And meet with Beehive's team of growth and newsletter experts today. Thank you so much to Beehive for their support. Welcome to The Rebooted Show. I am Brian Marcy. Before we get started, just something I want to let you know. We're going to be doing a series of gatherings this spring. We did a mixer in London a few weeks ago. My guest here, Dimitri, was there. Hopefully he can speak to, he can endorse the mixer format. We're going to be doing another one in New York City on March 19th. Our friends at Beehive are our partners on that. We have a couple of spots left over. These are always, you know, invitational, so to speak. But if you register your interest at a link I'm leaving, you know, you can get one of those slots. And if you join TRB Pro, we're going to be talking about subscriptions, you know, you'll get preferential access to all of these. And we've got other gatherings lined up. We're doing an audience strategy salon in early April. We're going to do an AI and media salon in May. We've got the media product forum coming up in May. Look, this is media. This is what you do. We're all in the events business. Dimitri, we can talk about that maybe. Dimitri Shishkin is my guest this week. Dimitri is a media strategist. He's best known for developing this user needs framework. It's going on like a decade ago, but it really has, I think, reshaped how many news organizations think about their journalism product. And right now is a time when I think it has to be rethought. And we're seeing a lot of resistance to that, a lot more resistance than I would have thought, honestly, because if you look at the marketplace, what is being shipped oftentimes out of a lot of newsrooms is not doing well in the marketplace. You can disagree with how Will Lewis certainly phrased things to the staff at the Washington Post with nobody is reading your stuff. But what he was saying was absolutely true. And the data does back up that what the Washington Post has been shipping, and frankly, it hasn't been shipping that much, hasn't been very efficient, is losing in the market. And so we want to talk about like how to win in the market, because at least here in the United States, I don't see us going to a non-market-based system. Maybe, who knows? I do have some thoughts on that. Anyway, Dimitri was, until recently, the CEO of Reair Media International. He oversaw digital publication operations across Europe and I think Africa too, right, Dimitri?
In part,
okay. He's got some ties to the Balkans. Maybe we'll get to that. Anyway, Dimitri, thank you for joining me. I think, you know, you really sit between journalism, product, audience, and this is where the future of this industry is going to be.
I actually pride myself for that. I'm an editor by profession, and I have been trained classically as an editor and spent many years editing things. But about 20 years ago, I started getting into this internet thing and became really interested in product data and audience and content conversion, effectively, like that intersection. So you really cannot be a really good editor without really understanding product and data well.
Yes.
And I think that journalism, we need to make journalism indispensable in people's lives. So I, as a consultant, I always ask my clients, like, what would happen if your organization will disappear tomorrow? And if there is a silence at the end, then there is a problem, right? Because we are moving from kind of output-based journalism to usefulness-based journalism. And the user needs are the proxy for audience centricity and usefulness.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So you came up with this framework at the BBC, it was a decade ago. We should have a mixer.
Well,
we should have a mixer to celebrate this.
We need to be very, very honest about how it came about. The idea came from audience research people. And I call myself enforcer evangelizer and collector of user needs and publishing, right? So I enforce it and I spread it globally. So, but sometimes I think,
but come on, it's branding, Dimitri. We can get that past that. Like,
I know, but you need to be very humble about kind of the origin came from audience research, of course.
Okay, of course, and that is how all innovations come about. Like, but you know, so first of all, explain what user needs are, and you know, in some ways, I think when people hear about them, you'll tell them, like, it'll sound like, all right, that sounds pretty obvious, but like, explain
that,
it.
That makes my life as a consultant, right, so easy, because I actually don't flag anything that people are saying, oh no, this is so away from journalism. This is the epitome of journalism, this like the beating heart of it, right? Because I basically say, I don't really care what you output and what you want to write about. I can actually help you to do it better. And why are you doing it better? Because some user needs you're trying to satisfy, they're not the user needs that people are actually needing or in need of being satisfied, so to speak. So, for example, it all started at the BBC because in 2000s, we were growing like that, hockey stick growth across the world. Like, you know, it doesn't really matter, Bangladesh or Kenya or Brazil. And then suddenly in 2010s, we started plateauing. And why were we plateauing? Because the local competitors started doing journalism better than us, relevancy-wise, speed-wise, like all of that type of stuff, innovation-wise. So our guys went around the world and started asking questions, why do you consume news in the first place? And they, of course, came up with this idea of six user needs that created the model we started applying to all our content. And suddenly the growth started happening again, because on the day when Macron wins elections, you don't write an update me story because everybody else in the world will be writing update me story about that, but you will write an educate me story about...
Okay, but explain. People don't know what it is, Dimitri.
Well, you know, where have you been?
I know. In Europe, everyone knows what this is, but a lot of my audience is in America, and they're going to be new to this.
Yeah, I actually was asking myself, so, but with one caveat, okay? So one of the people, the brightest people in our sector who actually confirmed that I was on the right path was Louise Story when she was at Wall Street Journal, because when I approached her about this, she actually sent me some slides where already Wall Street Journal was already segmenting stories according to user needs. And when Vogue created a model dedicated to their fashion coverage based on the BBC model, and then Vogue suddenly, and then Journal, I suddenly thought, okay, this is actually happening everywhere at the same time. So it's very easy. People consume news because a piece of content does something to you. That's why I never believe in those Frankenstein articles where many user needs are in the same article, because suddenly, what is your headline going to be? So people either want to know something, or they want to understand something, or they want to feel something, or they want to do something with news. So effectively, you come to the newsroom and you say, well, this is all happening, but what is the best way of delivering that to people? Because people tend to jump to formats right from the start. They think, okay, story first, format second, which is completely wrong, because you need to say story first, user needs second, format third. And because of that, you suddenly say, okay, well, currently 7% of our output only brings you something valuable. Everything else goes straight to the wastebasket, or it's probably something like Pareto principle, 80-20 or something like that. So 20% of your content brings 80% of your value, but you actually need to know what this 20% are. I was just doing some reviews of some of the clients and also titles at Ringier when we introduced user needs model. And you do it section by section and you start looking at what user needs collections you have, and you need to double down on some and you need to stop doing some others because you're just not fit for that. You know, so that's why the connection between content, data, and product is so crucial here, because suddenly you start creating products based on user needs, but you also need to have your data super clean in order to actually capture everything properly.
Okay, I just want to level set. I'm gonna describe what the user needs are because I can get them out of you. Update me. All right. That is keeping that's the classic. And most news organizations over index, I think. On that.
Crazy.
And that is like news. It's like, what's new? What's happening? Like, you know, who's the new Ayatollah?
Who is the new Ayatollah is actually educate me, but
okay.
Continues.
Okay, no, well, I mean, like, it literally, the name of the Ayatollah is up to me. The Ayatollah, the new Ayatollah got chosen. Educate me is to help to understand an issue. Who is Mujtaba? Like, who is this guy? Yeah. Okay. Give me perspective. you know, that's the analysis function, right? And that is let me just finish. I know you're passionate about this, okay? But I'm going to go through these. Give me perspective is provide the analysis and interpretation of different viewpoints. What does this mean for the war? What is this like, you know, what does this mean for the regional stability? Inspire me, probably not applicable here. Oh, a new history of the Middle East is going to be rewritten. This is, you know, but this is something that, you know, news organizations need to provide. And I think oftentimes do not provide enough of, because it's like, you know, if it bleeds, it leads in news. Help me, which is, you know, this used to be to me like service journalism, which is practical advice, information to make decisions, you know, more than just gift guides, if you will, during the affiliate little boomlet. And then divert me, which is give me something different. Give me a game to play. You know, look at the New York Times with its games thing. So that is, and then there's two supporting needs, right? There's connect me, which is part of a community. And then there's reassure me, providing clarity and confidence in uncertain situations. Do I have that
well,
right?
You were quoting from different models, okay. But if you look at the most comprehensive model, which I analyzed about, like, I don't know, 30 different models, and we created the most comprehensive one. So in no area, you've got abate me and keep me engaged. In the understand, it's educate me and give me perspective. In feel, it's inspire me and divert me. And then do, it's connect me and help me. And you would say reassure me is probably part of the help me potentially. But the idea here is, Brian, an individual topic is not connected to user needs directly. Like, for example, entertain me is always divert me or something like, oh, entertainment is always divert me. Actually, you take a story and you try to apply any type of user need which you consider the most interesting one for this particular topic. And there is a really easy lesson that you can do or play. You can play with your newsroom where you give them a topic and ask them to bring you all the headlines representing each of the user needs on that particular topic. And that's a really healthy way of doing it.
Yeah. So like, have you done analysis as for, I mean, it obviously varies across publications, right? But if you're the Atlantic, I'm going to use a lot of American examples, but like if you're the Atlantic, you know, you're going to break news like every now and again, but they're always going to be more perspective. It's a magazine like brand. But if you're the AP, it's going to be update me. I mean, that's like what they do, right?
Well, not necessarily. So going to Atlantic actually, together with Journal and Vogue, were one of the first people who actually created their own models based on the BBC one. But I vividly remember when Atlantic published a couple of internal documents of how they came about with their model and everything. And one particular user need they were promoting was they introduced me to the authors at the top of their game, which was an incredible, I guess, confirmation that you actually need to have a model which will be different, a little bit different from others, to actually justify your specific space in the market.
Yeah. So like, when you're looking at this, like, why... why is this like needed necessarily? Like, I would have thought that like newsrooms would be focused on their audience needs. I mean, they should be just
by default.
Like, it's kind of strange that this is, it would be like a, I don't know, a candy bar company being like, you know, we should actually focus on like the candy people want to eat. And like, well,
shocking.
I want to get at the culture bomb. I'm like joking about it a little bit, because sometimes I wonder whether there is like a real cultural change that needs to take place, in that you're operating in a market and you need to create a product that the market needs and cannot get from others. Like, this is 101 stuff in some ways of anyone who is operating within a marketplace. And I sometimes wonder if there's a culture that thinks that this profession doesn't have to operate in a marketplace. And that's why there's always the pining for the quote unquote benevolent billionaire who isn't going to, you know, and then the benevolent billionaire is like, I'm losing $100 million a year. Sorry.
Yeah, but you still can argue that journalists and editors are interested in stories.
Yeah.
And there is nothing wrong with it. But what they're not interested in is how they can deliver their stories to the audience at large. I used to be so cross at the BBC when my editors would say something like, but we're a public service, we have to report on this. Yes, I agree. But if you are just reporting on something in the most boring way possible, i.e. satisfying this proverbial update me type of thing, then you don't, it's your failure of not having done it properly. So people get engaged with those type of stories. And that's where Give Me Perspective comes in. This is where Educate Me comes in, Help Me comes in, and all of those. So it's actually about always asking yourself, what does this piece of journalism do to my audience? Full stop. Nobody's questioning that we need to report on news, but there are just better ways of doing it. And I mean, we'll talk about it later, but the more niche you become, the better return on investment there is, because you actually understand your audience much, much better than generalists, because you actually understand what drives your community and what they need from you. And, you know, I see time and time again, the deeper you go in the kind of pyramid of output, the more effective you become.
Yeah. And so what I wonder is, like, first of all, then why do you think that there's a resistance to this? Why was this even needed? It's not like widely. So why? What is your diagnosis?
Well, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of.
I mean, the BBC is a particular sort of, you know, it's like in the here they're going to be a little bit more exposed to market forces, but it isn't as much there. But why outside of those particular instances do you think that this is not like caught on?
Well, because everybody has a problem of overproducing wrong type of content, right? And because ultimately people are just always thinking, okay, well, we need to cover this and that and that and that. And by coverage, it's just like, I remember being an editor myself. It's like, okay, this happened, go and write a story about this without really giving people a proper feedback of what exactly you need to go and report. But if you are sitting your correspondent down, and by the way, news gatherers, i.e. correspondents, are content providers by default. And they, as long as you tell them exactly what you need to bring, they will bring it. So actually working with news gatherers for me was much easier than working with people who sit behind the desks and actually output, well, who actually commission output. So it wasn't, I think it requires newsrooms to change how they think about journalism in the first place. Like, what is this conversation? It's about audience value. It's about, and that's not really comfortable, because suddenly you're questioning the fact that people really don't think about your audiences that much. And that's why when I wrote this piece about, well, I spoke at Digiday conference about a few months ago, and they called my point controversial when I said that the new editor-in-chief, the next editor-in-chief cohort, should be coming from audience development teams rather than from individual beats areas. Because audience engagement people, by default, if they are classically trained as editors, they have been exposed to so many useful verticals and disciplines that regular editors are not. And we're talking about product, about data, about audience development, about all of those skills that regular beat editors are not really strong at.
Right. So I think you'd mentioned before, a lot of times, you know, people focus on the format versus like the need, you know, and that comes down to, is it an article? Is it a short video? And these are all very important. Like, I think the atomic unit of a lot of particularly news has been the written article, right? And there have been a lot of attempts to reinvent the article over the years. It is not a native format to the digital age. The 700 word inverted pyramid news article is like, if it's not already dead, but like it is still shipped a lot of times. Like Axios you know, came out with some bullet points over a decade ago that, and I joke about that, but it was like, you know, that was an innovation in the article format, which is to me a sign of, oh my God, this is really far behind. And now we have AI barreling down the pike. And it seems to me that there has not been enough attempts to really rethink how this content is packaged.
Let me be clear about what I think about this. First of all, remember this famous Quartz graph where there was a peak for short form, there was a peak for long form, and there was a big drop in the middle. And that middle is classic online coverage, story coverage, like 700 words. That was already done more than 10 years ago, that slide. I remember using that slide even when I was at the BBC, already was saying, it's either we do short and fast or we do really in-depth, different and original, blah, 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 all of that. But still people defaulting to that. Before we go into, like, it's inevitable that we will touch on multimodality here, because I am really interested in how user needs can help you with multimodality. And actually my Neiman Lab predictions for this year was about that. You only will be able to achieve true multimodality in media if you are not going to stick a button, listen to this article, or, you know, turn it, this into a video type of thing for every article you do. But you need to be much more strategic about how you select different modes for different type of output and different user needs. So, and that's why you need to have, firstly, super, super clean data at the your performance based on formats and based on topics and based on user needs. So those three things are really important ones. And then you start applying the multimodal thinking to that. And you think, okay, that constellation of user needs, topics, and formats should go into that. And by formats, I actually mean, I don't mean audio, video, and text, because audio, video, and text are content types. Every format can be applied to then content type, because you can have an explainer in video, you can have an explainer in text, can have explainer in audio. So it doesn't really, you can't really jump into a mode without really figuring out what format you need to have. But I do a lot of work with newsrooms exactly on that. So kind of before jumping into all of those execution of how you do things, you actually need to understand what exactly you're trying to do. And then it's a lot to ask of people like that, because it's a big thing to introduce all of those things. But once you do it, you can see a real value, because suddenly your output becomes much more structured and becomes much more persistent and, what's the word, directional, intentional. So that's the word I was looking for. Mm-hmm. You need to be intentional with every single decision you are making about every single piece of content that you're outputting. And that goes back to my point about the niche publications and the individual kind of discipline publications that actually understand it very, very well. That's where we actually will take user needs probably next, because I guess verticalization of output will be, and nicheification of output will be the next frontier that we really need to properly go into.
So, I mean, when you're talking about this, you're talking a lot about like kind of basically like editorial decisions. And I think the question that I end up having is how many of those are going to be made by editors themselves, right? Like we've already see algorithms are doing the job of selecting, you know, the stories that most people see. And that's a reality. And I feel like there's this parallel reality that goes on where there's meetings about things that go on the like front page and stuff. And like, it literally doesn't matter. So I think what I end up wondering is whether all of these decisions are just even going to be made by the quote unquote news organization, by an editor or anyone. Like at the end of the day, like we all have different user needs, right? For the same thing that's happening. Mojtaba, I know the information. You don't need to update me. Okay. What I need is I need to know whether this means that this thing's going to last even longer or what. Like that's where I want to jump to. Now, someone else, they've never heard of this Mojtaba guy. You know, I'm a little, you know, I'm in deep, like, so with this topic. Won't that inevitably be made with AI?
So this is what really excites me about this. So let's just take one step back. And before we go into this like complete future where you turn your content into any type of thing that you might even consider thinking about. But one thing is about actually starting training a muscle inside the newsroom to start reacting to algorithmic notifications about what works, what doesn't. So when I was at Ringier, for example, I actually introduced a role into every newsroom I was running that was only reacting to algorithmic notifications about what is working for their content and what needs to be improved immediately on the day. So because if algorithm sends you 100 notifications a day about what can be improved immediately and you only react to 20%, you already lose, right? So you need to be aware of those things, because frankly speaking, human brain, everybody knows that human brain is not able to calculate all the permutations as much. And I think the challenge here, Brian, will be in order to get to the future that you just described, which I completely agree with, and I think that every story probably will be delivered in about, I don't know, 30, 40 different ways, and that will include user needs, formats, and content types, i.e. audio, video, text, whatever, and everything in between. But what needs to happen is that you need to normalize, for example, all your data points that you are gathering across your network. And what I mean by that is that, indulge me for 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. Imagine you have a host of URLs that are interacting with 10 third-party products that you have in your newsroom. One of them is editorial analytics. One of them is email marketing tool. One of them is the push notification tool. All of those tools that one of the they create reality about what good looks like only for that tool specifically. But the only thing that really unites them together are the URLs that you are producing one way or another. My ambition would be to get to a state where all of those metrics, different metrics, different kind of points of view and everything are normalized with each other and actually create one single point of view, which actually is unified for one newsroom. So instead of showing me 10 different dashboards and saying, well, according to this, this works, according to that, that works. No, that needs to be normalized one way or another. So you need to create some kind of ontology of metrics that really you understand very well what works, what doesn't, and in a bigger scheme of things. And only then you will be able to say, okay, now I understand how complex all of that interaction with different distribution strategies and different user needs and different all of those, how they all work together and how they can be leveraged and optimized. That I am really excited about. And I think we can get somewhere because it's not about optimization of front page. It's actually about optimization of everything that you are outputting.
Yeah. And I guess the point I was trying to get at was like it seems to me like a choose your own adventure will be like the sort of successor in that. And I don't know how, I don't really know if it's going to be done on the publication basis. I think in many cases it won't be. I think The Atlantic and BBC, like these are the minority of the minority of the minority. Okay. These are the top of the top. The reality is, you know, the 98% are not at that level, right? And so what I don't know if people are going to be going to specific, like you talk about URLs. Like I have no idea if we're going to be talking about the idea of like URLs like in 5 years. I don't know, Dimitri. We might have to have a bet on that because like I don't know if that's going to really even matter at the end of the day. With the acceleration that's going on with particularly with agents, it seems pretty clear that people are going to have their own news agent that's tuned to their own needs. The idea of a publication trying to divine the quote unquote user needs, like in some conference room in London or New York for all these diverse people, just seems to me to run counter to everything that is happening in the broader ecosystem. And if we've learned anything in the last generation, it is that media is downstream of technology and has to adapt to technology. We can talk about the mistakes of the quote unquote pivot to video. Turns out that it was actually right, but that's just reality. And so I'd love your reaction to that idea that like, you know, maybe it's a little provocative, but like none of this really matters because ultimately the packaging is going to be done by AI agents anyway, based on my user needs. You don't have to like guess my user needs. Cause I've yet to see one news provider that has been able to guess my user needs. None of them.
Let's be maybe talk about steps that actually need to happen before we go into the future, which you described. Because I still believe that actually one-to-one relationship between media production and individual person is the way forward. I actually think that I agree with you that once you establish those relationship and then people understand so much about me as their user and their audience member and their community member, then they will be serving my needs much better than before, for sure. But in order to do that, in order to actually, let's not overestimate the ability of agents to redo things in a way that actually will be helpful to people. Because, for example, you know, turning an Update Me story in the Educate Me story, you can do with agents because you have archive and you have all of those things. But, you know, in order to create Connect Me article on that topic or Inspire Me article, or if we talk about recently launched sports model, which we just launched about a month ago, Take Me Behind the Scenes or Relive It With Me, all of those user needs, you will need to base it on reporting and on actually kind of people going and talking to other people and creating the regional connection between humans, which is really important. And then the technology for me is secondary. And my answer, I understand that it is very, very, very editorial from that perspective. But I actually think that this, what have we as an industry have been missing in the last couple of years, the point of view of a editorial vision on that, because it's very easy to become futuristic if you talk to technologists, if you talk to people who understand the agentic workflow. And I, as an editor, I understand it as well, but I still have my editorial sensibility in terms of what needs to happen in order to your editorial to be connecting to people in a way that is meaningful. And going back to our user needs conversations, if you don't understand, if you can't answer the question, what user needs were the three top most popular for you, this particular section in the last quarter, and then make a differentiation between different platforms where you are, you're already in big trouble because you don't understand your ABC. And those ABC things, they really need to be in place, like probably, you know, 3 years ago when we're talking about, but not now.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it seems to me that, look, the things that are most at risk from AI are like update me, and a lot of aggregation is at risk. I think explainers are at risk. Like I don't rely on news provider. Like that to me is probably like we started like an explainer series at Digiday around like programmatic stuff. I don't think it's relevant anymore, honestly. And they still do them, but like.
Well, I was recently interviewed for the article "WTF is liquid content" by Digiday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so no, I mean that's this still exists, but I don't like. That's just a lag, honestly, because you know even people in this space are a little bit behind because there's not going to be a market for that kind of stuff. I mean, look, I think there's lots of stuff we keep doing, but there's no future for it. Right. But I think that perspective is going to be is most protected, but also just like breaking news. Unique data sets are incredibly valuable in this world. And so in some ways, it's like a return to the future. I think the mechanisms are going to be very different as far as how that is packaged and delivered to the audience, whether it's through agents or whether it's through editors. I have my point of view. But ultimately, you know, like News Corp's CEO, Robert Thompson, you know, recently took to describing how news organizations will end up being, you know, inputs for AI, you know, and because they're striking deals with these and ultimately, you know, marketplace is going to be developed. And that is where some people will be able to pull off these DTC models of like subscriptions and stuff. That is going to be, and I think that is the future of being very audience focused. But a lot of the future of this business seems to me is that it is going to be as an input to more centralized AI systems and other AI products.
You touched upon the future of the setup of the industry overall, because there probably will be, even on the level of individual countries, there probably will be a winner takes it all type of player, like a generalist who will continue, whose brand is so strong that people will still consume it one way or another. Mm-hmm. Well, it will be whatever platform they will be consuming that content on is secondary. But
yeah, niche luxury product.
I still think I actually think that maybe generalists, well, I do a lot of work with generalists, and I actually think that the only way for them to survive is to start treating themselves as a collection of 50 or 60 niches.
Yeah.
Because every single section they do is a niche competing with other niches and everything else. And there is nothing, your health coverage and your personal finance coverage actually are not really connected, and they shouldn't be. And in the eyes of the audiences, they are not. And the competitors are different and all of that. So the issue, the biggest problem will be for people who are not different to anybody else. And what that means is also quite, you know, can be different from market to market. But I would still say that niches and individual specialized content, you probably will still be okay for some time. I don't know. But if you can't in one sentence describe how you're different and what different role you play in that market, that is already a really big problem for you right now.
Well, yeah, right, like, now. And I think a lot of this, like when we talk about this more with less era, you know, this industry is under compression, right? And it is under severe compression, and it is going to continue to be compressed. Like everyone is for sale, and there's going to be a lot of roll-ups that are going to happen. And if you don't like what's happening now, you're not going to like what's going to happen for a period of time, because there's still, and that is reality. And there's going to be a lot of protests, and this is unfair. I'm telling you, it is going to happen one way or the other. And so a lot of organizations are going to need to change. So you mentioned something about like generalists. I don't think there's a future for most generalist publications. You can talk about, you know, a couple of small little examples, and I'll agree with them. But again, they're the exception to the norm. The idea that you can be great at food and health and business and politics and foreign it's ridiculous. It's not going to happen.
And yeah, I agree with you.
And so like people can cry about the Washington Post cutting certain coverage areas because they remember how it won a Pulitzer for this and that. That's the reality of the market. Trying to be all things to everyone is a losing strategy to me. And so you're going to have to pick where you're going to make your impacts, it seems.
Exactly. And remember how I told you about this blank piece of paper where you say, well, write your mission statement in one sentence. If you're unable to do it for every section and every category, and you need to start thinking about all of them differently, those niches and everything separately, and the user needs model are going to be different. And that's why I met a publication that covers legal news and everything, and they have their own model based on the original BBC model. And then I would love to create a model for personal finance. I would love to create a model for retail, for example, because everybody's a publisher right now. Everybody's a media right now. And you really need to start creating things that are going to be different. And a model that is created by, I don't know, Net-a-Porter will be different to a model of Vogue. But will Selfridges listen and create their own model for their own coverage and how they actually create things for retail and for fashion and everything else? So everybody needs to remember that you need to satisfy people's intention or really need to be there where the intent is there from the audience.
So, you know, I've been circling around this conversation, but like I'll be more direct about it. I listen to and I take mostly seriously the tech guys. And because they're astride, you know, the distribution and the monetization, I don't see that changing. I only see their power getting greater. I don't see a future where large numbers of people are typing in the URLs that we're talking about. Like, I just don't see it. I really don't. And I think like, you know, a lot of publishers need to get out and talk to like regular people. Like, it's just not part of their lives. And like, there's a lot of habits and you can ride that stuff to the end. I mean, people are still with print as a distribution, but like it ends. And so what I end up like thinking about a lot is whether or not culturally these organizations should fight being what Robert Thompson says of being AI input companies, because he says that he's the CEO, right? He's like talking to like investors and whatnot. You cut down to the newsroom level, and I think people are throwing up in their mouths a little bit.
Well, it is a radical thing to make that connection between are we just providing content for other people's interfaces and everything else, and people have been burned so badly by big tech, the first age of big tech.
And I definitely suddenly, wouldn't trust oh my God, them. I'll put it that way.
Well, what I'm saying is that you need to start with something, and that something will be saying, well, even remember that we are going to be an input. Okay, you're lucky if you're going to be cited, because even AI overviews on everything, you know, how many citation things that there are like three companies that are going to be presented to people, and that's it for one particular topic, and then on the current interface or current UX and everything else. And you're thinking, okay, well, there is no hope in the world to anybody else at all. And you're already seeing the companies that are striking deals with AI companies. You understand that all they're interested in is basically in language output coverage. That's it. As long as you have Le Monde and French, you actually don't need any other French publication. And that's completely irregular because, you know, there will be publications in that area that will be providing content that Le Monde will never provide, right?
Well,
so the question is,
I don't know. I mean, I I'll take the opposite side just for fun. Yeah. If you look at it from the position of like the AI like company side, right? They need unique, valuable data sets. It's very obvious that these models themselves are somewhat commoditized, right? And so what is going to differentiate them is access to unique data sets that others do not have. They took all the old stuff. Okay, boo-hoo, we can try, you can lawyer up a little bit, let the New York Times lawyer up, let them try to fight these titanic battles. I don't think like regular news publishers should spend much time thinking about it because it's not something they can control. Maybe a marketplace like emerges, but from their perspective, they want to have unique data sets and they want to be able to use that as branding, right? So if you're the only, let's say, let's just use AI chatbots because everyone focuses there first and foremost. If Claude is the only, if Claude has access to New York Times content, Guardian content, Financial Times content, Wall Street Journal content, and others do not, then that is really good marketing. Now, whether they use other sources and mix it in, the fact that like they're displaying the logos of those, that actually makes a big difference. I don't think it's like something people want to like think about necessarily, but like there is a possible path where increasingly what news organizations are doing, and I think this is the model that Silicon Valley is pushing, so I think it's good to pay attention to it. I think they view news organizations like raw material producers. They go and they dig nuggets out of the earth, and then they're refined through the economic chain, and value is added, okay? Now, that is where journalism organizations have been doing is they've been digging the rocks out of the earth. They've been doing the refining. You know, they've been enhancing it. They've been marketing it. They've been packaging it, et cetera. And I think what the vision of these tech people is that actually journalism is just some AI input, and that they're just going to be an AI input company. And if you're an AI input company, you radically change like what you're doing, and the shape of your organization changes quite a bit. That's my theory.
I don't disagree with that. I would just add a caveat to that, that if you're in Jakarta or La Paz, or you probably need other providers rather than the relevant providers for your own market rather than the ones which you mentioned.
Well, I'm not going to mention every single freaking like
No. But what I'm saying is that translating your Wall Street Journal coverage into Bahasa Indonesia will not solve their problem, because actually the user need will not be satisfied because the local coverage probably will not be there.
No, this is not what I meant at all. What I meant is that the role of news organizations will be to be inputs into these models, whether you're the Indonesian Wall Street Journal or the Wall Street Journal.
It doesn't really matter. Okay, I understand. However, I agree with you with that. But the question here is that in order for you to start to become relevant for AI companies, because at some point of time, AI companies also probably will, like, what is your view? Will they stop at some point of time, or will they be just hoovering everything that there is? And then they also will need to understand which source is more relevant than others, and what is the trust? And the trust is becoming the most important metric that we can still leverage against the big tech, because I think that a lot of companies, somebody will need to say what is the most trusted organization for this particular part of the world, or whatever. And that is where the fight will happen. And that fight will be won by companies that treat data product and editorial equally important parts, because only then you will be able to start packaging things or start presenting things for, you know, becoming almost like AI feeder clubs. But you still need to have that kind of idea of what good looks like. And if your editorial is rubbish, you will not make it. If your product is rubbish, you will not make it. If your data is rubbish, you will not make it. But if you have an ability to actually improve all three of them, you will have a much better way of existing in the future, one way or another. We don't know what the future is going to be, but if you don't have any of those three things taken care of, then it is going to be a problem.
Yeah. I just wonder how much the packaging part of journalism will continue to be as prominent a source of value, right? So you mentioned the stories. Like, story is a package, right? And we've been telling each other stories since the caves. And I'm long stories because I just look at like we've been doing it since the caves. So I assume that we're going to continue to relate to the world around us by telling each other stories. I don't know if the storytelling function, and I think there's an argument to made that there can be too much storytelling mixed in with news. I think that there is a lot of confusion. I know reading the New York Times now, I don't think people recognize it. I would encourage you to go back 20 years. It's like a bracingly different experience of what this product is. And I don't mean the short form videos and whatnot. I just mean how they approach the journalism product is very different. It's very, very, very story heavy And that's very different.
But also, you also go to some kind of proverbial front page and you will see 13 different stories on Iran all scattered around different parts of that front page without really, never understood why. And
I think of narrative. You know, and yeah. And you know, again, there, I think it's interesting because there's these two, there's like, we are data providers, we're information services providers, right? And that's like a straightforward lane, right? And then there's the we're packaging, you know, like look at the value that Apple derives. It's designed in California. It's not built in California. It's built in China. You know, a lot of the value is in the packaging of the technology, and I just think that there's going to be this push and pull about whether journalism becomes an input and a feature of different products, or whether it can persist not in the most prominent cases, but overall as a packaged product. Do you know what I mean by that?
I actually will build on what you just said, and I will say, yes, I understand what you mean by that. And going back to all our kind of earlier points of our conversation is that media right now, they don't have a content problem as such, okay? Because, you know, we're drawing content and all of that. But what media currently is, the biggest problem they have currently is the utility problem. So you need to justify why you are needed by the audience and by people and everybody else. And every media needs to solve that problem, utility problem, by itself. Because then if say, for example, your company needs to be known as a educate me type of company. Let's take Vox, for example. When Vox was launched, they had 6 user needs all sitting under educate me and give me perspective area. They basically had 6 very distinctive user needs all sitting on the big explain to me type of thing. And that, you know, that is a nice differentiation, because you can say that every single type, we always will be applying 6 different ways of telling you and educate me or give me perspective user need story. Okay, fine. But the question is, this is now a time where 90% of media will probably disappear, because actually they are not even to answer themselves a question like, what am I outputting and why? Why am I and how my output actually is connected to the P&L, which I post every quarter or something like that? And I think that the faster we do it, the better product we're going to have, and then
yeah,
we'll have to survive the future, whatever it comes.
I think, and you talk about sports, you're into sports, right? Like, you know, sports is a great example in that the score, like what happened in the game, like the idea of, and you know, people mourn, you know, the Washington Post giving up on its sports section, and again, like the same people are now working for the Athletic. I'm not going to mourn, because like, what is the difference? Like, whether the Washington Post like does it or the Athletic does it, like it doesn't really matter. Like, I'm not really going to like spend much time crying about that. Great that the people, like, you know, hopefully they got raises. Who knows? Maybe they have better benefits. I don't know. But like sports, like there's no economic value really in recapping the game. The idea that you used to send, and you know, there's a lot of warning of this, you used to send the beat reporter to you know, on the road with the team to go to the press conference and ask the coach the same question. You know, you guys seem like you played with a lot of energy in the second half. Like, yeah, okay, that's gone. But like what I've noticed with sports coverage, and I don't know where this fits in the user needs, is it's gotten so much more sophisticated in why this happened, diagramming plays and diagramming for the hardcore people who I don't necessarily just want to know that the Sixers, you know, won. I want to know like how they're, you know, how they're executing in the pick and roll without Joel Embiid. And that kind of like expertise to me, it is indicative of where things are going. There's always going to be the storytelling aspect, getting the behind the scenes, Shams Charania, like, you know, like this is a guy, like guys breaking, you know, he's got all the agents feeding him the stuff, but like, you know, he's like breaking who's going what, who's fighting with who, gambling scandals and whatnot. That'll always be fine.
I'm very glad that you mentioned it, because when we launched the sports model, we created the model basically looking at, you know, Athletic coverage, looking at BBC sport coverage, like all of those big guys. And when we ran the model by them afterwards, we're saying, does it make sense? They said, actually, it never even occurred to us to even think about capturing user needs measurably, like numerically, okay? But yes, we do all of those things. And I'm an avid Athletic reader. I'm a big Chelsea fan. I understand that Chelsea coverage will be the best on Athletic, and I understand that. Relive it with me. Get me behind this. Take me behind the scenes. Fire me up. What else is there? Introduce me to or any other user needs. And there, the model is very similar to news. People still want to know something, understand something, feel something, and do something. But the plethora of user needs, and actually, it's very clear why creators, they satisfy Fire Me Up user need much better than any other sports media publication, because it was not in nature of a sports media publication to actually create a Fire Me Up user need story. And at the same time, if you're looking at the output of a club, the club will never do an educate me type of piece, because they will not explain why they had the fourth coach in the last year, why they have fired the previous three ones. It's just not what they do. But they still will do relive it with me and, you know, take me behind the scenes and all of that, because they understand it intrinsically that the value of engagement fans. And when you do the analysis of the sports user needs model, you can see that it's kind of not dissimilar to news. The model is different, but the output is not. People overproduce wrong type of content in astronomical numbers.
Yeah.
But once you start looking at the engagement metrics like loyalty, new people, returning people, conversions, it's incredible how individual user needs actually drive those numbers.
Right. But it's interesting, like you use sports, but I think it's across these, what I call like the information space, in that the economic value accrues more to the sort of commentary and packaging and point of view and perspective and analysis side than it does in the, literally, it's like news, I think, in some ways has been like commoditized, because the reason you float to that, you don't have to pay to unearth the facts. Like, it is almost like an uneconomic activity of unearthing like news. And I think that is like a societal challenge, right? But like,
it's completely how user needs were created. Why? Because in 2000s, 2010s, when BBC started losing its grip on all the markets around the world, well, not in the English language ones, but in vernacular language ones. Why? Because anybody who subscribed to Reuters feed, they can get the commodity international news, and the BBC value was just not there anymore. But once BBC started covering international news with different lenses of user needs, suddenly that value became evident again. So I completely agree with you that commodity is done. It's done and dusted. And that's why the sooner everybody goes into non-update me user needs, the better it's going to be for ecosystem.
Right. I think the big risk is that everyone respond, like, look, institutional media is losing to creators right now for the most part in the marketplace. Okay. And the economics of the creator world are far better than the economics of institutional media trying to be comprehensive, sending people into dangerous situations and all of the costs. And then on top of that, you can't even monetize the output, because advertisers don't want to be around your investigation of the U.S. blowing up that school as it seems apparent, right? Like, I mean, good luck like telling Procter & Gamble like that's like something they want to, you know, they'll talk about it on conference stages, but then, you know, in reality that they don't want anything to do with that. So that's a loss leader, you know, and that, you know, that is a societal benefit. But I think the big danger is, and we've seen this with optimization, is you optimize yourself into areas that are against the mission. And I think journalism is unique as a business and really difficult to run in many ways, because it has a mission. And most companies, if you're a candy bar, you might talk about a mission, like, you know, and, you know, PR or whatnot. But, you know, the job is pretty clear.
Yeah.
You just got to sell more candy bars.
Yeah, but that's why, you know, that's why I'm so interested in looking into niche publications and creating individual user needs models for them and with them, because suddenly you say, okay, well, I was, you know, the Bureau for Investigative Journalism has created a model for itself. Why? Because they suddenly say, well, we'll work on something for a couple of months, and then, you know, the story is gone the following day, and we are trying to make more impact of that. And then that's why you understand, actually showing me your inner workings of how you actually conducted the investigation was a really needed need. So sorry for the tautology, but what I mean is that people who read the Bureau for Investigative Journalism, for them, the process of you creating the story and how you do it and how many people you called, how many people refused to talk to you is equally important as the investigation itself. So you just need to understand why you exist in the market in the first place. And for your audience, your community, rule number one, newsroom is not allowed to create its own model of user needs. They always come from the audience itself, right? And the audience will tell you, actually, like, please show me more, take me behind the scenes type of stuff rather than update.
Yeah. Although, so let's talk about that for a little bit, because, you know, it's the old saying is if Henry Ford asked people what they wanted, they would have said like a faster horse. Right? Yeah. And I've just noticed in like user surveys, like in user, like a lot of times people say things and they don't necessarily act. There's a big difference between what people say and how they act. And a lot of times it's depressing. Because like how they'll say, you know, like in B2B, they always say, we won research. We were absolutely, and then you do the research, you pay a lot of money to do it. And they don't want that. They just want to know, what's how much other people make for a living. And, you know, and consumer, it's even worse. Like there's a reason that that every publication is doing Game of Thrones recaps, right? And you can, listening to the audience can be kind of dangerous to the mission in some ways, because a lot of times you're listening to the audience through algorithms that are interpreting what the audience quote unquote needs.
But let me be clear. Mm-hmm. We are much more sophisticated than that. Okay. So it's not just listening to the audience verbatim. It's kind of looking at the data across time, looking at cohorts. So I'm not interested in how a particular topic performed over the last month. Give me the data for the last 2 years, then I actually will see the peaks and troughs and people, the kind of all of those things will even themselves out and everything. But I'll give you an example. So I live in Wimbledon in London, and I never read Wimbledon Guardian, local newspaper. I subscribe to it, but I never read it because they tend to write about crime and traffic jams and everything else. And I live in an area of Wimbledon where every street is called after something or called linked to Australia. If Wimbledon Guardian were to write a feature about why it is a thing, I will send it to everybody I know in Wimbledon. And the local newsletter, which they just set up, just passed the 10 million subscribers. It's called The Wimble, and they are using the user needs methodology, maybe inadvertently, without really knowing it. And suddenly they write about interesting people who live in Wimbledon, and they answer people's questions mm-hmm. about Wimbledon. And no wonder 10,000 subscribers. Okay, it's a free newsletter, and probably it's paid for by a local shopping center or something like that, but it's not promoting the shopping center. It still gives me a weekly thing that Wimbledon Guardian is not doing. Very simple, right? Going back to creators and all of that. And I, in my thinking about niches and turning every single section of your generalist newspaper into a kind of niche publication about something, this was my last parting gift to Ringier before I left. I wrote a paper for them about the newsroom of the future, what it should look like, what it should consists of, okay, original content, commodity content via AI, point of view, and people being associated with the topic and everything else, and also a utility, some kind of a tool, because content by itself is not enough for people to engage with your brand day in, day out. You also need to give them some kind of utility as well. So all of those things, they are super complicated to do, but you need to tackle them methodically and consistently and strategically, one by one, and very, very patiently, because that's the only way to survive.
So the final thing is like, so let's talk about that newsroom of the future of like in 5 years, right? With yep. everything that's going on with AI, I see like a paralysis in many companies. You don't know what you should be building. You don't know what you're going to need. I mean, people are saying we're not going to have nurses in like a couple of years. Like, I don't know, our doctors, your radiologists are done. Everyone is cooked. If I go on X, everyone is cooked. I just want to go back to bed. Well, and so I wonder what does that look like? Because you talked about AI doing commodity content. And I feel like there's this third rail of journalism with AI in the journalistic process. It seems very clear that AI is going to be embedded in most information services, if not the entire economy. Now, whether it will work or not, I don't know, but it is going to be, it's going to be tried. That is for sure. So what does that end up looking like? Because we see a lot of pushback. And I mentioned this, like, you know, the Cleveland newspaper here in the US, you know, the editor wrote this piece that they sensibly put behind a paywall about like how interns now were not doing writing. They were just doing reporting. And, you know, the AP had a little kerfuffle around this recently. And I just thought there was always a divide between like editors and the reporters, because a lot of editors, they probably weren't going on X or LinkedIn and saying that, were like, yeah, that sounds good, because anyone who knows, a lot of reporters are not good writers, and a lot of good writers are not good reporters. So what does that look like? What is AI doing? And what is the most valuable skills in that newsroom of the future in like 5 years?
So I actually made a point to Ringier that the most valuable trait of a person for the future will be their flexibility. So because everything can be learned, all the traits can, well, all the skills can be learned, but your flexibility to actually move from one thing to another after 6 months or after a year or something like that. Because I remember the time when I wanted to do something different at the BBC. You would ask somebody and they will say, well, it's not in my job description, I will not do it. Wow. Well, it's a little bit different in the States, I would imagine, but it's it is a conversation. It is a conversation.
News is increasingly unionized here, and that is a wrinkle that, I mean, the reality is, no matter how you feel about unions and their place in these types of businesses, is, I mean, the whole point of it is to be resistant to change. Like I don't
know. Protecting workforce is a very, yeah, very important thing.
The spillover of that is throughout their history, unions have tried to hold back the application of technology to the workplace. And to be fair, a lot of this technology is explicitly trying to replace a labor function with software. That's the point of it. It's on the tin.
But I also made a point. Okay, say for example, you know, everybody is asking that question. Okay, if AI makes you 20% more efficient in a shift, not in a month, but in a shift. Okay, so you can do your thing faster. What do you do in another 2 hours that suddenly, you know, become available to you? Okay, so you either introduce kind of ongoing learning and upskilling type of thing. But you don't ask people to actually work more, because we are already dealing with people who are flat out and who are overworked and everything else. And you actually, sometimes it's a very important thing to say, you do it faster, but you need to go and experiment with something that you have never done before. And you need to publish it, and you need to show it to me after a month that I have done those experiments and I in my kind of free time, but not free time, but the time that...
Oh, people are just going to work more, Dimitri. The studies have shown here, people just have to work more.
I think it's about the messages that your C-level and your board is actually going to go publicly and talk publicly about what you exist and why you exist and everything else. But I really am a great believer that the progress always comes when the intersection of disciplines start to work together. And actually, you and somebody else has more time to go and speak to each other about something else, then something really nice can be published in like a month's time or something like that. But the problem here is not about publishing just for the sake of publishing. It's actually about productizing, because that's another problem with we're not even asked, because the innovation is one thing, but the biggest hurdle to innovation in media is about actually making it into a regular thing after you have done it once. We have seen lots of CTOs and CPOs publicly saying it that, yeah, no problem with innovation at all. Problem with actually embedding it in your own daily life and daily output and everything else. So I think that we will see a lot of interesting things and agents and, you know, all of this. But I'm only interested in things that actually become productized and becoming regular rather than one-offs.
So give me an example beyond the obvious. Like, so give me a European example for not New York Times, please, of someone who is really pushing forward with rethinking the journalism, the product of journalism. And the product is the journalism, like of these newest organizations. Mm. That is the product. It's not an app.
Yeah, you see some interesting things which say, for example, commodity content happening in Axel Springer, for example, how they automize hoovering everything around that is happening and rewriting it in their own style and then kind of not spending any time on those things and really allowing people to actually go and do proper regional reporting. And you know, and then that's what we are trying to do. I still work with Ringier and I help them to make the niche work happen. And without a doubt that niche segmentation from one topic to another always will be based on two things, your original reporting and your commodity reporting. And you need to find a way of actually rewriting things. Like, for example, I wrote this thing in my head and then gave it to technologists to build it, a tool for reversioning content from one Ringier publication to another Ringier publication. So you come in the morning, you don't have a night shift. Another company that had night shift is already in your system as well. And you see all the articles that can be rewritten. You don't need to spend time on that. You just press the button and those articles are already in your CMS, written in the style of your organization. And that is a really important thing, a really helpful thing, because you don't need to do that commodity thing right from the very beginning because somebody else has already done it potentially for you. So
I think what I'm trying to get at, is it better to be a reporter or an editor?
I don't know. I did both and I love both. And I think that it's...
not what you'd like.
Everyone
likes being an editor versus a reporter. Being a reporter is exhausting. Being an editor is like, let's do a story about this or that. And like, it's being a house cat versus being like an outdoor cat.
Become a better reporter if your surrounding disciplines are better at their jobs. They will make your job better easier and more interesting.
I think there's going to be more value that accrues to the reporting layer than to the pushing copy around layer. As someone whose career, you know, shifted into the pushing copy around part function. That's why I've gone back to actually making stuff in this part of my career, because I think like there's not going to be a lot of managers out there. But if you're not like literally producing and shipping the product, I think that's gonna be tough. There is gonna be a lot more orchestration. So maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll change my mind on that. I think the editing function will be far different than it was. Obviously, we've seen the copy. I like to say the copy editors always go first, RIP. I love a good copy editor, particularly when they're crotchety. You know, like I like a stereotypical copy editor.
Yeah, but ultimately you're right. Your originality, whatever you're doing, needs to be so different than it is. I mean, you show it by the actual existence of Rebooting Show, right? That the niches are the future. We just need to treat every single topic around us as a niche and micro niche and to try to make it work financially as well.
Yeah, well, part two. That's the tough part. All right, Dimitri, this is great. I love talking about this stuff with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for inviting me. Bye-bye.